Well, it's fantastic to be with you guys and to continue our Signs of New Life series. In fact, it's the last one. And I've loved going through John and seeing these signs that point to Jesus. And today we've got the story of the raising of Lazarus. It's a resurrection story. And don't we need that right now? I don't know about you, but been through a year of lockdowns and it's been tough, lost loved ones, uncertain of future. We need resurrection, don't we? We need God to come and do something new, to speak new life. And all around us right now, we've got signs of that at this Easter time with the buds and blossom and new life springing up, which is absolutely fantastic. So this is a story right in the right moment for us, I think. And I think God's heart for us is that just as the people in the story had their oh no moments or their what if moments turned into a wow God moment, that's what God wants for you and me this morning, that we might be resurrection people. So let's just think about that story. And before we do, I want to just lay out a bit of background. Jesus has been ministering in Judea, and they threatened to stone him because he claimed that he was one with the Father. And so he kind of went back to the backwaters of his hometown region. And this story takes place in Bethany, which is just outside Jerusalem. So it means going back into that dangerous territory, and his disciples despair of it. You know, when Jesus says, let's go, they say, oh, well, let's go with him then. Let's all go and die together. That's the background. He's going, walking into danger where he goes to respond to this request for prayer. And the people of this story, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, are a family that we've met before. If you remember the story in Luke's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 38 to 42, there we see Martha inviting Jesus into her home. And she's busily preparing a meal and serving him and his disciples. And then she asks Jesus to rebuke Mary, her sister, for not helping out. And Jesus says, no, Mary's chosen the better part. But, you know, that story is often misunderstood. It's not Jesus rebuking Martha for serving. He's not saying that somehow or other serving is inferior to devotion that Mary was showing sitting at his feet. But really, he was seeing a deeper need in Mary. Mary needed something from him at that time. And so he was allowing her that space. And more than that, he was actually encouraging women to come and sit at his feet to learn, because they weren't encouraged in their culture to learn. So Jesus was doing some amazing things that day. And let's not forget, it was Martha who had obviously heard Jesus speak, been blessed by him, really wanted him to come and eat in their home. And she continues to do that in the next chapter, chapter 12, where you can read later, after the resurrection of her brother, she's again serving in the house. And so she's enjoying her ministry. And that's something I want to say right out front. We should all enjoy our ministries without comparing them to one another, whether that's serving, whether that's devoting, you know, or leading in worship, or whatever it might be. Let's enjoy our ministries that God has given us. They're all great. This family, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, were no doubt wealthy. In the next chapter too, when Mary again is serving, Martha is serving, Mary, her sister, breaks a whole jar of spikenard, which is a costly perfume, over Jesus' feet and wipes them with her hair. Now, that would have cost about 300 denarii, we're told, which is about a year's wages. It's about 35,000 or more, you know, pounds in today's money. So they were clearly a wealthy family. And yet they were living on their own, which is kind of strange. Martha, Mary, and their brother Lazarus, where are the parents? Or maybe they're old, in which case that's strange, because why aren't they married? Unusual in Jewish culture. Also, why isn't Lazarus mentioned in Luke? It's the home of Martha and Mary. Why isn't Miss Lazarus in that story? Men were usually more important, so Maybe that God's saying something to us. Or maybe it's just that Lazarus was just young and insignificant as a boy, or maybe he was sick. Who knows? These are things that we can think about when we're trying to make the story more real. And it forms part of the background for us. As I said, each of the characters in the story really has a what if moment or a moment. When Jesus comes, Martha says, surely Lazarus wouldn't have died if you'd have been here. And Mary says exactly the same thing when she gets to speak to him. And even the crowds that have come to mourn with them, to mourn the loss of their brother, say, surely this man who opened the eyes of the blind, couldn't he have saved this man from death too? A lot of what if and sorrow there, which Jesus speaks into or acts into with the resurrection. Let's read the story. Verse 1 of chapter 11 of John. Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in that place where he was. Then after that, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and are you going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if one walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. These things he said, and after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. Then his disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well. However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he was speaking about Jesus, about taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him. Then Thomas, who is called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. Just want to pause there just to reflect on that. Because if we want to be resurrection people, if we want to see something different happen, something unexpected, then we have a lesson here. And the very first lesson is that we must know that we're loved. We need to know that we're loved. Now, it seems to have been common knowledge that Martha, Mary, and Lazarus were people that Jesus loved. John tells us that. But the most important thing is that they knew it, that they had confidence that Jesus loved them. Because when you have confidence that someone loves you, it gives you the boldness to ask them for help. I love my friend Mick, and Mick has always been faithful to me. If I've got into trouble, I know I can call him and he will come to my rescue. He's done that many times, including once when I ran out of petrol or broke down. So we need to know we're loved if we're going to call on a friend. And just like John did, actually, John was a disciple, actually, who knew that he was loved by Jesus. That's how he refers to himself in this gospel. In fact, he had so much confidence in Jesus. Him and his brother asked if they could sit at Jesus' left and right hand. I'm not saying that was a good request. I'm just saying the kind of confidence he had in knowing that he was loved by Jesus to ask such a thing. Do we know we're loved? That's a question to ask ourselves right now. It's the most important thing for us to know. You know, some people think theology doesn't matter very much. It's a bit academic. But I really fundamentally believe that how we see God, how we see the world, affects how we live. It will either hinder our walk or it will help us walk into a place of wonder and a place of expectation of God doing things, a place of faith. My own personal testimony is the more confident I've grown in the love of God and his grace towards me, and also in his a certain knowledge that he loves the people that I meet. It gives me greater confidence to ask him to do stuff. And I've seen him do more as my confidence has grown. Sadly, too many of us settle for doing what we can do in our own strength rather than depend on and partner with God for breakthrough. And I guess it's easier to depend on ourselves at one level. It's risky, isn't it, to depend on this God that you can't see. But it's always worthwhile. The question is, can we, like Martha, say to Jesus, maybe she's about to say to him, even now I know that whatever you ask of God, he will give you. Let's read the next part of the story. So when Jesus came, he found that he'd already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection in the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world." And when she had said these things, she went away secretly and called Mary, her sister, saying, "The teacher has come and is calling for you." As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha had met him. Then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, "She's going to the tomb to weep there." Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." And some of them said, "Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying?" And here's the next little key to being resurrection people. And that is to know that our God is moved by our troubles. When we face troubles and hardships, we can be tempted to think that God doesn't care, that he maybe forgotten us, he's abandoned us, or maybe even that we deserve those hardships because of some sin or other. But that's so far from the truth. God is not the kind of God who stands aloof and far off, rebuking us for the things that we've done wrong. Neither does he just simply wait for us to calm down so that he can teach us some important lesson. No, he enters into our pain. He groans with us. He weeps with us. And he also acts. You see, the Greeks had this notion that God was the unmoved mover, that God was so perfect he couldn't be touched or moved by anything that happens in our lives. They thought that would make him weak, that would make him changeable and therefore not perfect. That's so far removed from this Jewish God that we see here, so far removed from Abba, Father, because he has compassion. He's often moved with compassion. That's what the Gospels tell us about Jesus. He identifies with our pains. He weeps with us in our troubles. So if you're facing difficulty right now, if you're facing sadness right now or loss, for whatever reason, take a moment just to picture Jesus weeping with you. This is God. His heart is pained along with ours. He's at our side, not standing over us in judgment. This is the kind of God that John is describing to us in Jesus. But it doesn't end there, of course. Yes, he loves us. Yes, he weeps with us when we're in pain, but he's also the God who acts. He's the God of resurrection. Jesus is the resurrection. He loves to turn our mourning into dancing. So the story continues. Then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be a stench, for it's been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you've already heard me. And I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me." Now, when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." And he who had died came out, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Loose him and let him go." Wow. Death is not the end. The end is not the end. And this is the third point I want to make. Yes, God loves us. Yes, God weeps over us. But also, he's the God who acts. And the end is not necessarily the end. Jesus, in chapter 16 of this gospel, will then teach his disciples that in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the trouble. I've overcome the world. Living in a fallen world where there's so much pain, where we have pandemics and tsunamis and forest fires and droughts and floods, not to mention all the pains that we cause one another, is difficult. And our God doesn't take us out of this world. Like, he suffers with it. He asks us to join in and to suffer along with it. And the New Testament, you know, the apostles are often saying to us quite annoyingly at times, you know, "Rejoice whenever you face trials of many kinds. Persevere through them," you know, and we can learn and we can grow through them. Yeah, absolutely. And see God do wonders through them. But if we're going to do that, we need to know the end's not the end. The Old Testament is full of stories like this. Sarah needed to know that menopause wasn't the end of her dream to have children. Joseph needed to know that betrayal and imprisonment wasn't the end of his dream to maybe lead his people. Moses had to learn that failure and wandering in the wilderness aimlessly for decades was not the end of his dreams. David needed to learn that rejection or being ignored by his dad and then being hunted down and betrayed by his king was not the end of his dreams to be the anointed leader of the people too. And God was always teaching Israel that their faithlessness, their idolatry, their wandering away, their continued rebellion over hundreds of years that ended in exile was not the end. God still had more to do. So we need to know that the end is not the end. When we face tough stuff, a belief in resurrection is necessary for us to persevere through tough times. And death is the toughest, isn't it? And having lost my father this time last year and a neighbor and another dear friend this year, I've needed to know that more than ever in my life. I don't think there's been a time when I've needed to know that God is the God of resurrection more than I do now. And as we look ahead to 2021 and beyond, we all need to know that. He's a God of resurrection. Yes, like Martha said, at the end of days, but he's also the God of resurrection now. Jesus shows them that death is not to be feared. It can be overcome. And he raises Lazarus. That's a temporary reprieve. In a few short days' time, he would then be crucified and be resurrected himself, which in which time he would destroy death. He would destroy the power of death, the fear of death over us for all time, that he would set us free from every fear, knowing that no matter what this world does to us, that nothing can really truly harm us because he's the God of resurrection. Can we hear Jesus say that to us now in our lives, no matter what we're facing? Or at the world, when we look at maybe national things or international things like, you know, the climate crisis, extinctions going on, racial injustice, the oppression of women, slavery, children being abused. Can we believe that God is the God of resurrection in those kind of circumstances too? Can we hear Jesus say, I am the resurrection and the life? I want us to encourage us to do that, to be resurrection people. And like Jesus bringing resurrection, we're called to follow him. Can we bring resurrection? Can we speak it out and prophesy it? Ask him to come and help, because it's those who ask who see the wonders. So that's where I want to land today. Will we be resurrection people? To do that, we need to know that we're loved. We need to know that we're loved, because it's those who know they're loved who invite him to help them. Do we know that Jesus is moved by our pains? If we do, we won't get swallowed up by that pain or by the if onlys or the what ifs of life. We'll look up and look to Jesus, knowing that he's the God of compassion. And he'll give us compassion too, for those that are living in pain and those that are in need of resurrection around us. And then knowing that we're loved, knowing that he's moved, will we then step out with him and bring resurrection life, knowing he is the resurrection and the life? If we do that, we'll expect him to do wonders. We'll work with him to bring new creation, to bring new life in this world. And we will seek glory. You know, that's Jesus at the end, at the beginning of that story, he says, you know, this will not end in death, but it's for the glory of God. You could say that this is not a story about death, but about resurrection, about glory. God often brings glory through things that look hopeless. And he can do that for you and me today. Amen.